Start from the Mishnah on the bottom of Nun Gimel Amud Aleph. Okay, so the Mishnah tells us, Makum Shano Hagu Limkor Behema Dakal and Nachrim Mochren. Makum Shalono Hagu Limkor Ein Mochren. Uvachol Makum Ein Mochren Lohem Behema Gasa, Agalim Usiachin Shalemen Ushvunen. So the Mishnah tells us that there are different minhagim in terms of whether you're allowed to sell smaller animals to non-Jews. So it just depends on the minhag of where you live. But larger animals, like even baby cows, baby horses, right, calves or foals, the Mishnah says that you're not allowed to sell to non-Jews under any circumstance. Why exactly can't you do this? So interestingly, the Gemara here doesn't really discuss it much, but it's really a Gemara primarily in Maseches Avodah Zarah that explains that that a lot of the issues that are involved here is that perhaps there's a chance that the sale may get voided and that the non-Jew may end up working with the animal on Shabbos, and that retroactively you ended up owning the animal and violated the issur of Shvisas Behema. So that's why there are a lot of these gzeros imposed. Again, the Gemara of Avodah Zarah kind of discusses some of the details of these halachas, which the Gemara here doesn't really get into so much. Then the Mishnah continues, and it says not only does the issur apply to regular large animals, but even if the animal, let's say it has a broken leg. So even there, the gzera applies, because again, if we let you sell a large animal with a broken leg, it may lead you to selling a large animal that's healthy, which again may lead the non-Jew to working the animal on Shabbos, which may end up falling back on your head eventually. Then the Mishnah says, Rabbi Yehuda matir b'shvura. However, Rabbi Yehuda says that no, that you're allowed to sell an animal with a broken leg or an animal that's not fully functional, because in that case, Rabbi Yehuda says there's no chance that the non-Jew is going to use it for malacha. Ben Beseira matir b'sus. Ben Beseira says that you're allowed to sell a horse to a non-Jew. What's the difference between a horse and other animals here? Because the only thing that presumably you would do with the horse is ride the horse. Riding an animal on Shabbos is only an Isser Derabbanan in the first place. So we don't have to make a gzera l'gzera. We don't have to say, don't sell the horse to the non-Jew lest he come to ride it on Shabbos. Because even if he does, it's only an Isser Derabbanan. So we're not going to go that far. And then the Mishnah ends off. This is the part that's going to be relevant for us in the Gemara. The Mishnah further says that different communities had different minhagim about whether or not you were allowed to eat roasted meat on the night of Pesach. So the Mishnah says, follow your minhag. So the Gemara now explains. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Asur lo la'adam sheyomar basar zele fesachu, mimnei shenira kemakdish behem tova ochel kachim b'chutz. So says Rav Yehuda in the name of Rav, that it is usher for a person to declare on this meat is going to be for Pesach. Why? Because it looks like you're declaring the meat to be a karban, and then when you go ahead and eat it at your seder, it's ke'ilu, it's almost as if you're eating it outside, it's almost as if you're eating a karban outside of the Beis HaMikdash. Again, obviously it's not literal, but it looks as if you're eating a karban outside the Beis HaMikdash. Amar Rav Papa, dafka basar, avochite lo, dimintar lefischa ka'amar. So Rav Papa has a slight caveat to this halacha. He says that which the Gemara said, that you're not allowed to declare a piece of meat to be for Pesach, because it looks like you're eating a karban outside the Beis HaMikdash, that's only for meat. But let's say I have a piece of wheat, I have a piece of flour that I'm going to use to bake matzos, and I say this should be for Pesach. No one thinks that you're using that for a karban. Everyone understands that you're simply saying that I'm going to guard it for the sake of making matzos, and therefore that's okay. So fine. So the Gemara asks, Uvasar lo, is it really problematic to declare a piece of meat to be for Pesach? Is that really true? The Gemara asks, Meisvei, Amar Rabbi Yosi, Todos ish Romi, Hineges b'nei Romi, Lecho gedayim mikulasin b'leile psachim. Todos was like the chief rabbi of Rome. So Todos used to tell the people of Rome, used to tell the Jews in Rome, that they should eat whole lambs on Pesach, meaning they should, in other words, basically replicate the carbon Pesach. They should take the entire animal, they should roast it the way that we did in the Beis HaMikdash, and eat it that way on the night of Pesach. So the Gemara says, Shochulo, il moli todos ata gazranu alecha nidui, sha'ata machil es Yisrael kachim b'chutz, kachim sal kadaitach, ela'ima karov l'hachil es Yisrael kachim b'chutz. So basically, Chazal were not happy with what Todos was doing, because it looked too much like he was basically having them eating carbonos outside the Beis HaMikdash. Again, it's not literal, you know, there was no Beis HaMikdash at this time, but again, it looked like he was encouraging people to eat karbanos outside the confines of the mikdash. Now, the Gemara makes the following diyuk here. The Gemara says, "Mekulas in, she'ein mekulas lo." The only issue that Chazal seemed to have with what Todos was doing was the fact that he was roasting the entire animal as a whole, because that replicates the act of the karban Pesach. The implication is that if you only were to take a piece of the meat, but not the entire animal, and declare that l'shem Pesach, it sounds like that would be a that it sounds like that would be fine. But that seems to go against what we said before, because before we said even just a piece, even just declaring a piece of meat lePesach should be a problem. So the Gemara says you're right. Amrei Mekulas Loshna Amar Loshna Lo Amar She'eno Mekulas Pireishin Lo Pireish Lo. The Gemara makes the following distinction: if it's an entire animal that you're roasting, then that's a problem regardless of what you say. Even if you don't say anything, even if you don't specify that it's for the sake of the Karban Pesach, it's still problematic. Whereas a piece of meat, just a regular piece of meat, is only going to be problematic if you specify that it's for the sake of the Karban Pesach. Okay, then the Gemara continues. Rav Acha Masni Lo Laha Masnisin Ki Rav Shimon. So Rav Acha, when he presented this entire Mishnah and the statements that we quoted in the name of Todos, so he cited this in the name of Rav Shimon. However, the problem is the Gemara says Maskiflo Rav Sheshes Bishla Melamad Estani Lo Ki Rav Yosi Necha Elamad Masni Ki Rav Shimon Minecha VeHasnan Rav Shimon Poter Shelo His Nadiv Kiderech Hamis Nadvim. So the Gemara says that this whole formulation that we were just discussing, the story with Todos and the people of Rome about roasting the meat of the carbon Pesach, makes perfect sense according to Reb Yossi, but it's very problematic according to Reb Shimon, which again, the Gemara just pointed out that Rav Acha actually thought that the story was taught in the name of Reb Shimon. What statement exactly are we referring to? So the Gemara alludes to a Mishnah that appears in several places in Shas, where Reb Shimon essentially says the following. Let's say I pledge to bring a karban, but I do so in an incorrect formulation. So for example, we know that a karban mincha can only be brought from wheat and not from barley. So let's say a person makes the following declaration: I hereby pledge to bring a karban mincha of barley. So the question is that statement completely meaningless, or is there some validity to that statement? So in other words, it's almost like, do we chop up your words and say, well, the first half of your statement said, I hereby pledge to bring a karban mincha, and that should be enough to obligate you. But on the other hand, the last part of your statement said barley, which we know is not valid for a karban mincha. So according to Reb Shimon happens to hold that if a person does not pledge to bring a karban in the normal fashion, meaning he says something crazy like, I'm going to bring a karban mincha of barley, so then his entire statement is null and void. So the question is, this person who's making the declaration regarding the meat, everyone understands you can't pledge to make a piece of meat after the animal's already been shechted into a karban. You declare an animal as a karban Pesach while the animal is still alive. So for a guy to come and hold a piece of meat up and say, I hereby declare this karban Pesach, is a totally meaningless statement. So the question is, how does this whole story even get off the ground according to Reb Shimon? Because Reb Shimon holds that you need to formulate your pledge of a karban in a normal fashion, in a way in which you would normally pledge to give that karban. So the Gemara says you're right. Amar le Ravina le Rav Ashi. So now the Gemara pushes back. The Gemara says, well, who says that this story of Todos would even make sense according to Rabbi Yossi? The Ha'amar Rava, Rabbi Shimon Beshitas Rabbi Yossi, Amra, the Amar Afbe Gemar Dvar of Adam Nispas. My love me to Rabbi Shimon, Savarla ki Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yossi Nami, Savarla ki Rabbi Shimon. So the Gemara points out that Rabbi Shimon subscribes to Rabbi Yossi's statement in a few places in Shas, where he says, Afbe Gemar Dvar of Adam Nispas, which means that a person is even held accountable for the latter half of his statement, which essentially means we have to factor in everything that you said. So if the last part of your statement seems to undermine the validity of everything you said, that also has to be factored in. So the Gemara says, well, just as Reb Shimon subscribes to Reb Yossi, well, wouldn't we say the other way around, that Reb Yossi also subscribes to Reb Shimon, namely that if you formulate your pledge for a karban in an incorrect fashion, that the whole thing should be meaningless, which again is going to be problematic to understand the story of Todos and the people of Rome. So the Gemara says, lo, it's not true. Reb Shimon savar lo k'Reb Yossi, velo Reb Yossi savar lo k'Reb Shimon. The Gemara says that it's basically a one-way street. Reb Shimon agrees to Reb Yossi's idea that a person is also held accountable for the latter half of his statement, but the other way is not the case. In other words, Reb Yossi does not buy into Reb Shimon's theory that if a person pledges to bring a karban in an abnormal fashion, that it totally undermines the karban. In other words, Reb Yossi disagrees with that. So Reb Yossi holds that no, that just because you added I'm bringing the karban mincha as barley, he says no, that could still be a valid pledge that would still obligate you to bring the karban. Okay, so now the Gemara says Ibay Elohu Todo. Gemara has kind of an interesting historical question here regarding the nature of this person Todos. So we were assuming this whole time that Todos was this great person. He was a big Talmud Chacham. He was like a chief rabbi of Rome. And now the Gemara is not so sure about that. So on the one hand, the Gemara says maybe he was this tremendous Talmud Chacham. On the other hand, maybe he was what the Gemara calls a Bale Grofen. He was this strong, violent, you know, almost like a mafia type of a person. So the Gemara wants to know who exactly was this person. So the Gemara says Tashma Odzo Darash Todos Ishromi. Dodo's cave, another drasha. It's a very famous Gemara. It's actually relevant to this week's parasha, just happens to be. The Gemara says, why did Hananya, Mishael, and Azariah, in other words, what do they do to see fit to jump into the Kivshan HaEish? This is the famous story from Sefer Daniel, right, where Hananya, Mishael, and Azariah basically refused to bow down to Nebuchadnezzar's statue or idol, and they decided to throw themselves into the furnace, and they ended up surviving. So the Gemara says, why did they do that? In other words, the question is, why didn't they follow the mandate in the Torah of Achai Bahem that they should live by the mitzvos? What right did they have to throw themselves in? Now, some of you may be wondering, isn't this Avodah Zarah? If it's Avodah Zarah, then of course you have to give up your life for that. So the Rishonim discuss whether this was really Avodah Zarah or not. Some Rishonim claim, Tosos here and other places in Shas claims, that this may not have been real Avodah Zarah, it may just have been a statue of Nebuchadnezzar. So it's not exactly clear what the Avera was here. But either way, they basically threw themselves into the furnace. So the Gemara asks, what was the justification for that? So the Gemara says, Nasu Kalvachomer Ba'atzon Mitzvardin, from this week's parasha, Hanani Mishael and Azariah made a Kalvachomer from Tzvardeya, from Makas Tzvardeya. Umat Tzvardeim She'im Mitzuvan Al Kedushas Hashem Ksiv Behu Uva Uva Aldu Beveisecha Uv Sanu Recha Uv Misharu Secha Emasai Misharus Mitzuyos Eitzel Tanur Hevei Omer Bishasha Tanur Cham Anushe Mitzuvan Al Kedushas Hashem Alachas Kama V'chama. So he says that the frogs were never commanded, right, to listen to Hashem. They're frogs. They're not obligated in mitzvos, obviously. And yet, the Pasuk says that they jumped into the ovens. Presumably, the ovens were on when they jumped in. So these frogs were Moser Nefesh in order to follow the mandate of Hashem. That Hashem commanded that Makas Tzvardeya should be carried out. So Hananiah, Mishael, V'Azariah reasoned that if the frogs did this, then Kal V'Chomer us. We are commanded to be Makadei Shem Shamayim. We should certainly jump into the furnaces. Now again, whether this Kal V'Chomer holds water, whether this is a real Kal V'Chomer, there's a lot written about this Gemara, about exactly how this plays out Lahalacha. But again, the bottom line is this is what Hananiah, Mishael, V'Azariah figured. So the Gemara says, again, the only reason why the Gemara is even quoting this whole story here is just to prove that Todos was a Talmud Chacham and not some mafia guy. The fact that he was able to give this kind of a drusha indicates that he was really a Talmud Chacham. That's really why the only reason why the Gemara is even quoting this. Okay, then the Gemara says, Rabbi Yossi bar Avin Amar, Mitel Malai Lechis Shal Tamir Chachamim Haya. To Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Kol Hamitel Malai Lechis Tamir Chachamim, Zoche Vyoshe Vyeshiva Shal Mala Shenemar, Ki Vitzel HaChachma Vitzel HaKasem. The Gemara adds that not only was Todos a Talmud Chacham, but he also supported Talmud Chachamim. He would also give them business opportunities, he would give them opportunities to make money. And the Gemara says that anyone who enables Talmidei Chachamim to be involved in business and to make money, so the Gemara says that person will merit to sit in the, you know, in the shade of the Yeshiva Shalmala, in the shade of the heavenly courts. Okay, the Mishnah says Makum Shenagu LaHadlik Esaner Belele Yom Kippur Madlikin Makum Shenagu Shelo LaHadlik Ein Madlikin UMadlikin Bevate Kinesios UBevate Midrashos UVaMevoso Afilim VeAlGabe HaChol. The Mishnah presents different minhagim regarding whether people used to light candles before Yom Kippur began. And again, we'll see in the Gemara in a second what exactly the nature of this minhag was, whether they would light the candles or not. And then the Mishnah also says they used to light candles in the shuls and in the Batei Medrash and in the dark alleyways, and if there was a person who was ill, if there was a person who was sick, who needed a light, so they would also light candles for them. So the Gemara explains, Tana, Bein she'amru lahadlik uvein she'amru shelo lahadlik, shneyan ledav harecha niskavnu. The Gemara points out that whether your minhag was to light candles for Yom Kippur or not, everyone had the same intention. What does that mean? So the way the Rishonim explain is that basically the issue at hand here, we know, of course, that on the night of on Yom Kippur, so there's an Isra Tashmish Amita, right? That husbands and wives are not allowed to live together on the night of Yom Kippur. So therefore, he says that both minhagim, whether your minhag was to light candles or to not light candles, had the same intention. If you lit a candle, so the assumption was is that because we know that Me'ikar Adin, you know, a husband and a wife are not supposed to have relations by when there's light. So that was supposed to deter them from doing that. On the other hand, not lighting candles was also supposed to kind of deter intimacy because you couldn't see each other. So again, either minhag that you had was done for the same. For the same purpose. Okay, the Gemara says, "Amar Rav Yehoshua, Darash Rava, the Amich Kulam Tzadikim Yolam Yirshuaretz, Bein Shamru Lahadlik Uvein Shamru Shelo Lahadlik, Shneim Lo Niskavnu Elo Davarach." Again, the Gemara kind of just reiterates what we just said, that by citing the pasuk from Sefer Yeshayahu, which describes Bnei Yisrael as being righteous, as being a nation of Tzadikim, where the Gemara says that again, whether your minhag is to light candles for Yom Kippur or to not light candles, everyone has the same intention at the end of the day. Okay, the Gemara says, "Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Ein Mevarchin Al Ha'ur Ela B'Motzai Shabbos Ho'elus Chilas Briyasu." So the Gemara says that we recite a bracha of Borei Ma'orei Ha'ish right on Motzai Shabbos because that is when fire was created. Again, we spoke about this back in Maseches Brachos a little bit, right? That's when fire was created on Motzai Shabbos. So Amar Lehahu Sava V'Itei Rabba Bar Berchana Yishar V'Chin Amar Rab Yochanan. So Rabba Bar Berchana or some older person said, "Yeah, that's exactly what Rabbi Yochanan said as well. So now the Gemara says, Ula have a rachiv chamra v'azil, v'have a shakil v'azil Rabbi Abba miyamine v'rabba bar barchana mismale. So one time, Ula was traveling, was riding on a donkey, and he had Rabbi Abba riding on the right side, and Rabbi bar barchana was riding on the left side. So Amar le Rabbi Abba l'Ula, v'ade de amrisu mishmei de Rabbi Yochanan in mevarchan alaur, ela b'motzei Shabbos, holo schilas b'riyasahu. So he turns, so Rabbi Abba turns to Ula and asks him, is it true that Rabbi Yochanan really said this, that a person can only recite a bracha on fire on Motzei Shabbos, because that's when fire was created? So the Gemara says, Hadar Ula chazabe b'rabba bar barchana bishus. Ula looked up, he was staring at Rabba bar barchana, he was upset at him, because he realized that Rabba bar barchana, or he figured that Rabba bar barchana must have told Rabbi Abba about the statement of Rabbi Yochanan, but he never told him, but he never told Ula about it. So Ula was upset that Rabba only keyed in Rabbi Abba, but didn't key him into the statement of Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabba realized what was going on. He realized that Ula was upset at him. So Amar Leh, he said, no, Ana lava ha amre, elo ha amre. So Rabba said, no. He said, Rabbi Abba misunderstood what I told him. He said, I cited Rabbi Yochanan about the following statement. The son of Tana came into Rabbi Yochanan, Rav Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Yom HaKippurim Shecholios b'Shabbos af b'makum she'amru shelo lahadlik madlikin b'mnei kvod HaShabbos, v'ani Rabbi Yochanan basrei, v'achachamim motrim. Amar Leh, adot tehei. So he says, no. He says, really, I was citing Rabbi Yochanan in the following context, because Rav Shimon ben Elazar tells us that if Yom Kippur falls out on a Shabbos, even if your minhag in general is that you don't light candles on Yom Kippur, which again we pointed out in the Mishnah was is dependent on your general minhag, but if Yom Kippur falls out on a Shabbos, then everyone agrees that you have to light candles because of Kavod Shabbos. However, Rabbi Yochanan cites the Chachamim who say that it's not true, that where the Chachamim say that even when Yom Kippur falls out on a Shabbos, it's still usher to do. And then Ula responds, he says, yeah, adatahe. He says that is in fact the correct application of Rabbi Yochanan. So in other words, initially Ula was upset that Rabba bar barchana told Rabbi Abba a statement of Rabbi Yochanan without telling Ula. But then once Ula realized the correct context of the statement, he was appeased. He was okay because he realized that Rabbi Abba kind of misquoted or misrepresented the statement that Rabba bar barchana had told him initially. Okay.
Rabbi, when they talk about lighting candles here, we're talking about like we would say, Havni Kner Shal Yom Kippurim, or.
So yeah, I mean, that's the idea.
Or is it just lighting kitchen candles to have light without any
problem? No, I'm saying if you assume that the minhag is to light candles, then yeah, then you would probably be making the bracha. Again, Lemaisa, we all know that we do have lakas neighbors on, even on a regular Yom Kippur, so you're going to make a bracha anyway. But I'm saying that's the idea here. Again, what the purpose of the candles, whether it's to deter relations or whether not lighting the candles to deter relations, again, that was a discussion we had earlier in the Gemara. But the bottom line is that if your minhag is to light the candles, then yeah, then you're going to recite a bracha. Okay, so
you're talking specifically here about Yom Kippur. What about Yontif? I mean, Yontif.
Yeah, so Yontif. So the assumption is, again, this is a unique din by Yom Kippur because of the connection to Tashmish Amita. But when it comes to other Yom Tovim, for sure you have to light candles. Yeah, absolutely. So okay, so the Gemara now comments on the story. Kari Alei Rav Yosef. Mayim amukim eitzav elevish the ish tivuna yidlena. Mayim amukim eitzav elevish zeula the ish tivuna yidlena zeraba bar barchana. So the Gemara, so Rav Yosef commented on this whole story, this whole back and forth between Ula and Rabba bar barchana. He cited a pasuk from Mishlei that says Mayim amukim eitzav elevish that the deep waters give advice or counsel in the hearts of men, and a discerning person will draw out the water. So basically, the way that Rav Yosef interpreted this pasuk is that he was saying that Ula and Rabba bar barchana were so in tune with one another that they were able to that just by Ula looking at Rabba bar barchana, Rabba realized that Ula was upset at him and was able to discern his entire thought process. So he says that so Rav Yosef applied this pasuk to that story. Okay, so the Gemara now says, "V'inhu keman savrua ki hadu amar Rabbi Binyamin bar Yefes amar Rabbi Yochanan." So we know that we recite a bracha on fire on Motzei Shabbos and also on Motzei Yom Kippur. Now it happens to be that we do not do Borei Ma'orei Ha'esh on a Motzei Yontif, right? On a regular Yontif that falls out on a weekday, we don't do that. But on Motzei Shabbos and Motzei Yom Kippur, we do. Now, the truth is that the reason why we do that actually has nothing to do with the creation of fire, at least not la halacha. The real reason why we do it is because you're not allowed to cook on Shabbos or Yom Kippur. On regular Yontif, for the ochel nefesh is mutter, so there's no reason to light a fire. You're not distinguishing between anything. But on Shabbos Yom Kippur, when there's an isser even of ochel nefesh, so lighting the fire kind of makes that demarcation. Okay, so now the Gemara asks Meisvei, ein bevarchin al ha'ur. Elam Motzei Shabbos Olus Chilas Priyasu V'Chevan Sharoa Mevarich Miad. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Sojran Al Hakos V'Am Rabbi Yochanan Halacha K'Rabbi Yehuda. So now the Gemara presents somewhat of a detailed machlokas within Havdalah. So again, we said that we make Havdalah on Motzei Shabbos because that's when fire was created. But the question is, when at what point exactly do you recite Havdalah? So according to so the Gemara says that according to the Tanakhama, the second that you see light, you see fire, you make the bracha right away. But Rabbi Yehuda says this is the way that we Paskin is that no, you have to say it al hakos. In other words, just like you make all the brachas of Havdalah with the coast, you make besamim, you make ha'ezh and hamavdil on the coast. So you have to make this on the coast as well. So the Gemara says lo kashya kan buur sheshavas kan buur hayotzei min ha'etzim min ha'avanim. So the implication of this brisa is that you're only making Havdalah on Motzei Shabbos and not on Motzei Yom Kippur. So the Gemara says no. The Gemara says that it depends on what the fire was doing over the duration of Yom Kippur. So in other words, if the fire had been resting, in other words, it hadn't been used for malacha, right? The fire was either non-existent, or let's say it was being lit on Yom Kippur for a permissible purpose. Let's say you had a kola sheyesh bo sakana, and there was a heter to light a fire for that person. So if the fire was never used for an usher purpose, then you could use it for motzei Yom Kippur. But if the fire was coming from bricks and from wood that you used on Yom Kippur be'isser, then you would not be allowed to make havdalah on that. Okay, so then Gemara says Tani Chada Ur Hayotzei Min Ha'etzim Min Ha'avanim Mevarchem Alav V'Sanei Chada Ein Levarchem Alav. So we have a further contradiction between these two brises: whether or not you can recite Havdalah, whether you could say Borei Me'orei Ha'esh on a fire that emanates from wood and from stones. So the Gemara says again, Lo Kasha Kan Memotzei Shabbos Kan Memotzei Yom Kippur. Again, it depends on Motzei Shabbos. There's a requirement that the fire has to have quote unquote rested over the course of Shabbos, that it cannot have been used for the purpose of Malacha. Whereas on Motzei Yom Kippur, since again the fire wasn't created on Yom Kippur, it's created on Shabbos, those same restrictions do not apply. And the Gemara says, Rebbe Mefazran, Rebbe Chia Mechansen. So Rebbe used to scatter the brachos, which basically means that, you know, when he saw fire, he would say, Borei Me'orei Ha'esh. And when he smelled besamim, he made that bracha, but he wouldn't just, like, say it all at once, at one shot on the coast, whereas Rabbi Chia would do the opposite. Rabbi Chia would say all the brachos in one shot over a coast. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak Baravdi Mi'afa Pichir Rabbi Mefazran Chozer V'Sojran Al HaKos Kedei Lohotzi Banav Uvnei Veso. So the Gemara points out that even though Rabbi initially would say all the brachos whenever he would encounter that particular thing, he would then go ahead and say it again on the coast to be motzi his family, to mostly his wife and kids, afterwards in the mitzvah of Havdalah.